Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today on Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, I'm here with ESPN reporter Tom Ferry. He's the author of Game On, The All-American Race to Make Champions of Our Children. I'm also here with my brother, mental game expert, Dr. Patrick Cohn.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Patrick.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey. Hey, Lisa.
Tom, I've been reading some of the book reviews about your book, and it's described as a book about athletic ideals gone horribly wrong and the lengths we go to build our children into athlete entertainers at any cost. So it really piqued my interest. Can you tell me a little bit about what went into it?
Yeah, well, I basically come at it from two angles. One is as a father. I have a son who's 11, a daughter who's 9, and another son who's 4. And it's my third son who's actually on the cover of the book. He's the one in diapers holding the basketball up.
Great cover.
Thank you. He was one at the time, and we actually took that photo as part of a magazine. I'm a senior writer at ESPN Magazine as well, so I did a story about kind of where youth sports could be headed in terms of identifying and developing athletes. And so there was a company out of Australia that had come up with a genetic test based upon research that was done with Australia's Olympic athletes, in which you could figure out from birth what type of sport in general your kid ought to go into based upon it was one particular gene they studied that looked at fast twitch versus slow twitch fiber. And yeah, I mean, you can test that stuff with a cheek swab from birth. So anyway, it's a sort of a long-winded way of saying I've been looking at these issues for several years, for about 5 years, taking notes on them. You know, like a lot of parents, my weekends are spent going to soccer and baseball and lacrosse games and you know, our weekdays as well. And you know, if you spend that much time around that environment, you start thinking about things. Okay, what's the best environment for my kid? Is this stuff age appropriate? What should a coach be? How should a coach be handling a 6-year-old child athlete versus an 8-year-old versus a 10-year-old child athlete? You know, why are we competing in you know, travel team games in second and third grade? Why are we holding national championships, literally mm-hmm. national championships in basketball and other sports with the AAU in second grade? You know, why are we holding world championships with golfers in kindergarten? Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, all of these things, both as a parent and as a journalist, I really said, wow, the landscape has changed dramatically since I was a kid growing up. Everything has become so organized, so intense, so early on. And so my book was it's a look at how we got to this place. Why did the landscape change? And let's get beyond the whole thing of just simply blaming parents when things get out of control or we see excesses in place. And so I came at it from the perspective of, you know, I'm a parent who feels many of the same pressures that a lot of other parents do to get their kid into the pipeline and get them developed and get them access to opportunities. And so I just tried to really come at it with the tool that I have, which is that of a journalist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I went around and really flew to 15 – you know, there are chapters from 15 different cities from around the country looking at 6 or 7 or 8 different sports and a dozen organizations from the USOC to the AAU to, you know, to certain federal laws that have helped shape the environment. And, you know, so to cut through a lot of the mythology and a lot of the clutter about how we got to this state and really just ask some questions. Okay, now what does the research say about how to develop child athletes and keep them involved in sports and have it be the kind of experience that we all want it to be and have really wanted it to be for 100 years since Teddy Roosevelt and his crew came up with the idea of organized youth sports. So I know it's a mouthful, but the book is a mouthful. So.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like – can you tell me what the number one problem you found was? And I know that's tough, but we're our listeners are going to have to read your book, but if you could talk about the number one problem you found. It sounds, this idea of child entertainers really struck me, because there have been times when I was at my son's basketball games and the parents were all there and they just couldn't wait to watch four games in one day, that that's what it felt like to me, is our kids are entertainers for us.
Right. Well, they are in many ways. You've got to remember, I mean, and I didn't realize this until I looked into the research, but youth sports didn't, it was never the idea of kids. It was nothing that they came up with, saying, okay, let's all put on uniforms and go, play a travel team from an hour away, or even, you know, two neighborhoods over, and have structured league competitions and stuff. It was youth sports have always been structured for the goals and aims of adults, really, and that doesn't necessarily mean there was malevolent type of interest, but you know, from very early on, adults saw youth sports as a way to develop character in kids and create the next generation of, well, 100 years ago, you know, soldiers and corporate managers, really, to kind of move the economy forward and move the country forward. Over time, sports developed a significant entertainment component, of course, you know, with television and all the money that's flowed into pro sports and college, the arrival of athletic college scholarships, which have not always been on the landscape. So it, you know, sports is now an entertainment enterprise. So we now begin to look at kids to not only be developed through youth sports into good citizens for the next generation, but also entertainers, and parents are very much incentivized to look at them that way. You know, the kid who gets the athletic scholarship, has access to. I mean, parents don't have to save the $200,000 in theory, you know.
Right.
So I mean, there are a lot of reasons why parents are acting the way they are right now.
Now, how do you think this is affecting kids mentally? That's what we focus on, is the mental game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How does it affect their confidence?
Well, every kid's different. You know, I mean, that's one thing I've certainly learned in the book, is every child is wired differently, and I can see that with my kids. My eldest is sort of a mellow kid, likes sports a lot, you know. Likes to play a variety and is very cautious in how he goes about it. Always a good sport. Always, you know. If you lose, no big deal. He's never cried after a game. My daughter, my second one, likes sports, but she likes cooperative games, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't like highly competitive games, and the whole ramped up parents screaming on the sidelines, you know, coaches barking out orders, you know, girls fighting over the ball kind of thing. It turns her off.
Mm-hmm.
And yet my youngest son, my 4-year-old, he's 4, and the kid is like, you know, determined to win, whether we're playing Wii, you know, he's like, I won, you lost. And, you know, every kid is differently. So I think the environment impacts every kid differently. And there are a lot of micro environments too. I mean, I think a lot of it really comes down to the quality of the coach. If the coach has some understanding of how to communicate with children and some understanding of what's age appropriate, you know, what do you teach a third grader? You know, elementary school teachers know not to teach calculus to a third grader.
Mm-hmm.
That things are done in a developmental type of way. But a lot of youth coaches out there, they're not trained. They don't always know, you know, and so they introduce inappropriate techniques and tactics and styles to coaching, and that can be, and there's a lot of great stuff that happens out there as well, but that can be sometimes not such a great experience for kids. That is just when it is not age appropriate, and when sports is not tailored to what the kids are really trying to get out of sports themselves, which most often is number one, fun, number two, an opportunity to be with their friends, number three, to develop their own skills, and number four, to challenge themselves through competition. My book is not a rant against competition, but if those are the components that are in place, most kids are going to be a pretty good experience for them. But boy, you know, the incentives to make it a win at all cost environment are getting greater every day, and so I try and explore that in the book.
Now, do you propose any solutions? And again, we want to talk especially about things that would help kids improve their confidence and transfer skills they learn from to life.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, look at what the research says about why kids play sports. I mean, it's fun, you know. If you make these games fun, if you develop that as a coach or as a parent, if you help your child fall in love with the game, you know, on their own, where they want to come back from practice and go in the backyard and kick the ball around some more, or, you know, go out to the driveway and, you know, try a bunch of new things with their basketball. I mean, I think that's a real solid foundation for kids developing a lifelong love of sports. And so I think when parents ask me about that, I say, well, you know, what can I do with my elementary school kid, my grade schooler? I say, well, you know, just make sure it's fun, and then make sure that they're developing skills. The coaches they're with are focusing on technical aspects. You know, just having fun with the ball. If you're playing soccer, having fun with the ball, developing your footwork. It's not about winning tournaments and championships. You know, certainly at the grade school level, and you know, really even into the middle school level. These are all very these are little windows for development that you need to kind of respect where kids are coming from.
So, but you do agree that the kids should be developing some skills that make them feel confident?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the more skills they have, the more individual and team success they're going to have. And success is a reason kids would continue to play sports. Every kid wants to be good at something. No kid wants to be the one who's out there and is batting 0-0-0 and can't put his bat on the ball, can't catch the thing. That's embarrassing, you know.
Right.
So I think it's worth teaching skills to kids. It's just knowing how to do it in an age-appropriate way. Some kids, you know, literally, biomechanically, can't do certain things at certain ages. Most kids don't even, like, jump in a biomechanically mature way until they're about nine or 10 years old. So, you know, there's only so much you can teach a 7-year-old basketball player, or so much you should even want to try and teach a 7-year-old basketball player. So, again, I think a lot of this really comes down to coaching. So any parent out there who is volunteering as a coach, I would, you know, I'd make sure I get taught. I go to the Positive Coaching Alliance and take their online course. Go to U.S. Soccer and take a lower level course on how to teach soccer to grade schoolers or whatever group you're working with. So,
now, Patrick, do you have any thoughts about this? About some of these, how we do sports now and how it affects kids' confidence?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to ask Tom was, you had mentioned that the sports parents really, they get a bad rap today in youth sports, and you talk about how some of the other influences are out there, either societal influences or scholarship influences,
right,
or even coaching influences. What do you think, beyond the sports parent role, what do you think are some of the influences today in youth sports that create that win-it-all mentality and create the early specialization that we see, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I think two things are going on. One, in the past 15 years, the rewards for athletic achievement have gone up dramatically. Scholarship money on the NCAA level, scholarship aid for athletes has quadrupled to $1.5 billion per year. It's handed out each year in athletic aid equivalents. I mean, that is a massive jump. So parents are more and more focused on the idea of a scholarship. I mean, that's a big reason why the travel team environment has really, really grown dramatically over the past 15 years, because travel teams are essentially a pipeline to scholarships. You get your kid onto that team, and they're playing year-round. They're going to the coaching clinics. They're going to the exposure camps. They've eliminated other competition by age 12 or 13, and now it's a race to see who can actually, you know, among those who are still left to get these scholarships. So I think the rewards have grown dramatically. At the same time, and on the other side, parents are inundated with news about the obesity crisis, which is quite real in this country. I mean, we have one of the worst obesity crises in the world with children. And, you know, parents want their kids to be active, so they're that much more motivated to make sure their kids – stay in sports and have access to playing opportunities. Fortunately or unfortunately, in this country, we route our sports development system for the most part through the schools, up through high schools and colleges. This is a fairly unique thing that most of the world does not do. In most of the world, the sports opportunities are provided by clubs. Schools educate, and sport clubs do sports, and that's that. There's a separation. But here, we route them up through the high schools, and most high schools have a one-team, one-school concept. So there's one baseball team, one varsity, baseball team, one varsity basketball team, one varsity soccer team, and so forth. And that model works fine with really small schools and private schools that have a lot of funds. But at large public schools, places with 2,000, 3,000 kids, or even just 1,500 kids, and there are only 12 slots on the basketball team, and only 8 of those kids actually get any playing time, it gets very, very competitive, and parents know that. Parents know. This generation of parents came up through those large public high schools and knew how tough it was to make some of those high school teams. So they're looking ahead, and they're thinking, well, I guess I got to get my kid into that ramped up environment when he's in sixth grade, or maybe it's fifth grade, or maybe it's third grade. And they're thinking ahead, and they're thinking about their kid to make sure that once he gets to high school, he's got a chance to play on the soccer team or a chance to play on the basketball team. So, no, I think it's those two forces, really.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us. This is really fascinating.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
To listen to the rest of this audio, visit kidssportspsychology.com.